No work, no play, no pay. No work, no play, no pay. I received an email from a listener who is having some trouble. He's been in business for about 10 years, has a nice 4,000 square foot shop, has all the cool tools, including a 4x8 CNC. He has no employees and one really big problem. Let's see if we can help him. No work, no play, no pay. Hi, my name's Roger Kugler. This is Working at Woodworking Podcast, episode 98. I'm stuck in my woodworking business. Now what? I'm here to help you skilled woodworkers out there, maybe weekend warrior, amateur woodworkers, or professional woodworkers who've actually been doing this a while. But, you know, you just sometimes come up against a wall, come up against a problem. You need a little bit of help. So I'm here to help when I can, encourage all to get into professional woodworking, either on a big scale or on a small scale. So I thought this kind of went along with our last episode, episode 97. Now is the best time to start your woodworking business. Okay, so you started a woodworking business. You've been doing this for a while, a couple years, 5 years, 10 years, and you kind of hit a wall. Hi, Roger. I've been listening to your podcast and appreciate the work you put into each episode and the advice that you have given to new woodworkers. I have also enjoyed hearing your thoughts as a fellow Christian. I have been doing woodworking full-time for about 10 years. I began doing small furniture projects and some millwork. I did a couple of kitchens for family members and soon found myself only building custom kitchens. Over the past few years, I have built up my shop to better build cabinets. I have had a few young men work part-time to help with the heavy lifting and sanding. LOL. I currently have a 4,000 square foot shop complete with CNC, edge bander, rip saw, and wide belt sander. Unfortunately, I believe the market that I have been catering to has dried up. I live in an area that was hit hard in 2007 with the closing of a major employer. It hasn't been the same since. I have been forced to steadily increase prices since the COVID disaster, and with inflation so high, people aren't spending $15,000 to $20,000 on kitchen cabinets. I haven't had a new kitchen cabinet sales since the first of the year. I have laid off my help, and I'm finding it very difficult financially to continue. I'm in my early 50s, and after spending the last 10 years trying to get into this point, I'm finding it difficult to reinvent myself. I am probably a little burned out, and I'm finding it hard to get motivated when I'm by myself for hours at a time. I have had thoughts of trying to get into commercial cabinets or do custom garage storage, looking for something I could do with a CNC that wouldn't require a lot of hours to finish. Finishing is my least favorite part of woodworking. The biggest drawback would be driving to the city to find work. There is not any local market. Anyway, if you would like to see some of my work, I have a Facebook page. I don't have a website anymore. I know, but I never had any traffic through it when I had one. Any words of advice or encouragement would be appreciated. Signed, let's just call him Bob. Okay, a lot to unpack there. Number one, thank you for giving us so much information. Sometimes it's kind of like being a dentist, you know, pulling information out of somebody. There's a lot here. Thanks a lot, Bob. I think the best thing that I could suggest to Bob and anyone else who might find themselves in this situation. Now, Bob has about 10 years of experience doing this. That's fantastic. You may have 2 years doing this and find yourself in the exact same boat. A little bit more on that later. But I think Bob did a wonderful first step in that he actually talked to someone. And come on, let's face it. We as woodworkers, especially solo woodworkers, entrepreneurs, no one's going to win the Chatty Cathy Award, are they? No. We're just woodworkers of few words. And humans are a very communal species. We actually like to be around people some of the time. We do better with people than without. Of course, some of us like to be around a few people for a little bit of time, while others like to be around a lot of people all the time. Yeah, I don't understand them. So, I think my number one piece of advice that if you're in this situation, talk to someone. Your spouse, a friend, a priest, a business acquaintance, the janitor at your kid's elementary school, your barber, your bartender, your accountant, a professional counselor, a job coach, or former customers. You know, we tend to meet some very interesting people in this line of work. There might be someone there that could, you know, offer their 2 cents. But don't expect any of these people to solve your problem. You just need to hear your words out of your head. You hear those words out loud. And have somebody who will nod their head appropriately every now and then. You're the only one who can solve this problem. But it's real helpful to bounce your ideas off of somebody else. So don't be sitting in the shop brooding. You know, pick up the phone, pick up the keyboard, you know, go see someone, talk to somebody. That's how most of us, I think, really can work through problems is through that physical activity of speaking. You know, they may not know anything about business or woodworking or your situation, but I really think there's something about that physical act of just talking it out, as they say, that can really be helpful. And a second step I would recommend, make a decision tree. Because life is full of decisions. We have to do this or we have to do that. You're going to drink tea, you're going to drink coffee. Do you want eggs? Do you want toast? I mean, we make thousands and thousands of decisions, some decisions within a split second. And if we can kind of put this down on paper, it really helps us to kind of work through the decisions that we have to make. So I would say right now, the biggest decision from Bob's email is, do you want to stay in woodworking or do you want to leave woodworking? 2 huge, great big decisions, but I think they're absolutely necessary to address first before we move on to anything else. So let's explore this a little bit. If I left the woodworking profession, what would I do? What would be my dream job? Okay, professional male model is probably a little outside of my realm right now. I'm about 100 pounds and 40 years past that prime. But maybe there's something else. Maybe there's something that you've been thinking about. For myself, yeah, I could become a professional boat builder. Maybe even work with a small crew. That could be a lot of fun. Or maybe farming. That's a lot like what I'm doing now. So anyway, you have other ideas? I mean, maybe you always wanted to be a race car driver. Maybe you always wanted to be a teacher. You know, there's thousands of things that we might have dreamt about at one time, and there's nothing wrong with revisiting those things every now and then. When you're thinking down this line, what are your finances like? Do you have a little bit of a cushion that you can buy some time before you need to make a cold, hard decision? Or do you need to fill out applications to deliver pizza like tomorrow? You know, are you really strapped for cash? All these things are going to go into where you are now and where you're going to go tomorrow. And of course, if you have a family, if you have a spouse, a partner, you need to talk to them. You know, what is your overall family situation? That's going to be a very important point, everybody in together to provide input whenever you're making a decision like this. Now, Bob has a wife who has a good job. She enjoys it. So, yeah, the money is important, but I don't think he's delivering pizza anytime soon. And Bob revealed to me in a phone call that he doesn't really want to leave woodworking. I mean, when I asked him about his dream job, he said, well, be in woodworking. Okay, so we've kind of crossed that first big decision in the decision tree. So if Bob wants to stay with woodworking, now let's move on to step number three, which is analyzing the challenges and the problems. For this, Bob was very good at providing a list. The kitchen cabinet market was drying up. It's hard to reinvent myself. I'm a little burned out. It's hard to motivate yourself. Bob really doesn't like finishing. And he doesn't like traveling to the big cities. We pulled those all from Bob's email. So let's take them one at a time. The kitchen cabinet market is drying up. Yeah. He mentioned that in 2007, a major employer shut down in his area, and that really just kind of crushed new home starts and probably remodeling, kitchen remodeling in that area. When you have just one employer in an area and they go out, it can be absolutely devastating to a community. And if we look at the overall housing market, from 2008 through 2012, we all remember 2008, it was absolutely flat. There was hardly anything happening. But starting around 2012 through 2022, that's a 10-year run, we saw some pretty steady increases. I mean, it was year after year, a positive housing market. And then about the first or second quarter in 2022, we just hit a cliff. I mean, it just kind of dropped. A lot of that had to do with, number one, absurd market prices in the housing, and number two, really jacked up interest rates. I mean, you want to throw a wet blanket on something, that was a perfect way of doing it. So right now, as we're sitting, we're at about the 2007 level, just where Bob was whenever everything started to go really bad. Now, Bob is also in a rural area. I had to look it up on Google, and it was like, yeah, you're kind of in the middle of, well, agricultural area. Now, he's also uniquely positioned about 50 miles equal distance from three major metro areas. So, you know, the metros are down also, but they're not like bust right now. And the housing market in Bob's immediate area, yeah, there's nothing. It's, I don't know the area well, but I would not be surprised if that's just kind of saturated, you know, given the job market in those areas and the number of houses that are already there. Yeah, without a major employer pulling people in, it can get stagnant very, very quickly. So if he stays with the cabinet building, I really think you're going to need to tap into those major metro markets. How do we do this? Well, you're going to have to make contacts. You're going to have to find people in those areas and probably just pick one area so that you're not pulled in like three different directions. Pick one area that seems to have still has some strong business and burn some shoe leather, or now rubber. Get out there and make contacts. You know, make phone calls, send emails, go on job site visits. You need to meet some general contractors who need your services. Go to home shows. That's a great place to make contacts. Go to builders trade shows, if there's any in your areas. Reach out to contractor suppliers, building suppliers. Ask who's in the area who might have been struggling a little bit with cabinet suppliers. You could be really surprised, you know, where some of these guys can, you know, they know that market and they can very often send you in the right direction. And remember, when you're doing this, you're not trying to get 30 or 300, you know, people in a major market. You're looking for 2, 3, maybe 4, you know, high-end custom home builders, and they can keep you busy for a very long time. It's also a really good idea is not to have just 1 or 2 because, well, who says they're not going to come across some economic hardships, as they say, and you kind of right back into the same boat. I am a real big fan of diversity. Diversity in customers, diversity in products, diversity in investments. I mean, if you're all your eggs are in one basket, hope nobody sits on them. So if you do find a couple of these GCs, I know that you don't like big cities, but honestly, you might be able to train them to do the measurements and the takeoffs, send them to you, you come up with a design, have them approve that, you build the cabinets, ship them off to them, and they take care of the installation. You literally would not even have to leave your shop. And there's a whole bunch of people who do exactly that. There's some cabinet builders that they go out and they do all the measurements, you know, take photos, design the cabinets, go back to their shop, build everything, take it to the job site, and do the installation. I mean, they are from rough construction to finished product. There's others who build kitchen cabinets. You tell me what to build, I will build that. Then the homeowner, the general contractor, they are responsible for installing everything. So it can go both ways. I know that some of the real high-end kitchen cabinets, they don't do job sites. They rely upon other people to take the responsibility of the actual measurements and the installation. They just build cabinets. So that's one way of... That's something that could work. You get something up and running in one market, well, maybe start looking at another market. You know, find one or two guys in one of the other cities, and pretty soon, you know, you have, you're servicing 3 cities and 4 GCs in each one of them, and you're absolutely swamped, and you have deadlines that you probably aren't going to meet. Then you're going to have to hire some people to help you out, and then... Well, then you're no longer a small, independent, solo entrepreneurship, but that could certainly work too. And remember, I am not a cabinet guy. This is not how I make my living. I've built kitchen cabinets. I've installed kitchen cabinets. I've designed kitchen cabinets. But I'm not going to stand up and say that I'm a kitchen cabinet guy. Oh, there's one other problem with this idea. I really don't like finishing. Ah, shoot. Okay. I did talk to Bob about this, and he does, you know, do spray finishing, which in talking with other people, you know, they're still finishing by hand, and Lord help you. Spray does make the world go around. It's so much easier, and I've done episodes on spray finishing. If you're not doing spray finishing, I really encourage you to start spray finishing, even if that means with a spray can, a rattle can. Just get into it. Do a couple projects with the spray can, lacquer, whatever, then buy yourself a super El Cheapo spray gun. You know, one of those $100, maybe they're $150. You know, El Cheapo, Rockler has, I think, their own brand. Are they fantastic? No. Will they put material on a piece of wood? Absolutely. I finish all of my projects by hand afterwards. You know, I hand rub out the finish. Spray does a wonderful job of putting that material on much faster and much more evenly than I can by hand. So, okay, sorry for the tangent. So Bob hates finishing. He hates the sanding, and most of his work with kitchen cabinets are painted. That's kind of like all the rage now, or for the last 10 years. I even suggested maybe doing some hand finishing on kitchen cabinets. That was, you know, real popular for about 15 minutes. I mean, it's a different look, and you don't have to be so dag darn picky. I mean, one frickin' little gnat, boom, totally ruins your day. I visited one shop, and the guy has like 7 bug zappers in the spray room. I mean, he is serious about, you know, bugs. So if you hate finishing, which, okay, show of hands, how many people out there? Yeah. Hire someone who likes finishing. Maybe in their shop, although you're in kind of a rural area, they may not have anybody near you. Maybe you could find somebody who wants to get into this and they use your facility and your equipment. I know that kind of sounds like an employee. Here's an idea. Talk to some car guys, some body shops. I know that some of them can be super busy, but the reason I bring this up is that years ago, when I was really into sailing, I had a buddy who was redoing his sailboat, and these are the dinghy classes, small boats, 17 foot, and he wanted to have his boat repainted. He didn't really have the equipment or even the desire to do it himself. He knew a really good auto body guy, and he took the boat over to him, did a marvelous job. And if you think about it, these guys are the ultimate finishers. They are so incredibly picky. Boy, if you could get some booth time with one of them, oh, that could be a wonderful relationship. So just throwing that out. So up until this point, we've been dealing with kind of professional problems, not really personal problems. So let's take a look at some of these other things. Hard to reinvent myself. A little burned out. Hard to motivate myself. Yeah, I can definitely see that. These can be very hard issues, and I guarantee anyone doing woodworking professionally will go through this every year, every month, sometimes every day. And I think these things can kind of be boiled down to change. How do you deal with change? Now, humans as a whole, we don't do so well with change. We like things the same today, yesterday, and tomorrow. And then we complain about it. Yeah, nothing ever changes. I'm so bored. We complain about nothing ever changes until something changes. And then we complain about things changing. Oh, geez, we are so messed up. But everything changes. The markets change. Cabinet market, really good for a long time. Then not so good. Taxes change. Locations change. I mean, everything is kind of in flux. We change. We grow older, which is actually a good thing. But, you know, our health changes. And I don't care if you're old or you're young. You know, these things can pop up. Family issues change. So how we deal with change is, I really think, at kind of the root. And this is where it can be very, very helpful talking to other people about how we deal with change. So back to Bob. The one positive thing that he said, I like working with my CNC. Okay. Well, number one, you have a 4x8 foot CNC. That is fantastic. It's not a new machine. Bob bought it used, but it works, and he can make it work. He uses Mosaic for the cabinet work and has a Spire on that for virtually anything else, and it's running on Mach 3. So Bob really kind of has this down pat. I'm rather jealous. So what can you build with a CNC? Well, almost anything, depending on the CNC. One idea I'm just going to kind of throw out there is you've been building kitchen cabinets on your CNC. Maybe you could go on building kitchen cabinets. Maybe not for yourself, but maybe for someone else. Maybe someone's still, you know, in the dark ages and are pushing plywood through a table saw. They're breaking out a router to cut joints. Oh, how primitive. Maybe you could build the cabinet parts and they could put them together and then they could do their own finishing. That's an idea. I was reading in my latest issue of Wooden Boat magazine. Yeah, I'm kind of addicted there. There's a couple businesses in New England that really has gone into the CNC area. So much so that one of the shops actually stopped building boats and they are building boat parts for other builders. They've shifted totally into only doing CNC. There's another company over in England who is doing a very, very similar thing where these various boat parts are machined on the CNC for other builders. And the one shop, CNC shop, had, I think he had like 10 or 12 pretty constant, consistent customers that he's running full time and running two or three machines and seems to be doing a very good job of that. I know that there's a kit company called Chesapeake Lightcraft down in Annapolis, Maryland, and their entire business model is built on milling boat parts for kits using a CNC. They're one of the very first companies that I was aware of that adopted CNC. This was back in the 80s, you know, the real dark ages where people literally had to code by hand. I mean, it's incredible where that technology has started and where it is now. So that could be a really good way of using your CNC. And maybe another way that you could work this is, have you been on Etsy lately? There are so many different things on there that there must be, well, I'm not going to say hundreds, but several dozen makers on Etsy who are selling things that they use a CNC for. A lot of them are wood. Some of them are metal. You know, they're actually cutting steel into various shapes that people want and selling them. I mean, it's always kind of fascinated me how creative some of these people could do. So that would be something that would definitely could be a major source of inspiration, motivation, and hopefully money. So what type of products would you build with your CNC to sell on sites like Etsy? Well, honestly, I'd ask your wife. I mean, they tend to be much more plugged into things like this than we grizzled, overweight, short, balding, bearded, you know, woodworkers tend to be. Or, again, this is where talking to other people can be absolutely invaluable. somebody just mentions, oh, I saw X, Y, and Z. Could you make something like that? A light bulb goes off. Boom. You've just started another type business. Now, I'm not going to be the first person to say that Etsy's the world's easiest marketplace. Yes, there are billions of people shopping on Etsy, and there's probably millions of people selling on Etsy, but it can certainly be done. The one little piece of advice I would give if you're setting up an Etsy shop, photos. Incredibly important. People shop with their eyes. They don't shop with the words. If they see something they like, they're going to click on it. Your photos have to be very, very good. If you're a really good photographer and you know what you're doing, go for it. If you're not, hire somebody who is. This is kind of make or break. Have a good editor. Woodworkers, the last I looked, had never won a Pulitzer Prize in literature. We tend not to be that good with the English language. So make sure you have a good editor, someone reading over your copy, making changes. And I'll fess up right now and embarrassingly admit that, gosh, I hate to even say this, some of my best editors have been my customers. Oh my gosh, I actually said that out loud. Yeah, they'll kind of casually point out that I misspelled this word, or I really shouldn't use that phrase in that context, or I screwed up my comma usage again. So photos are super important, but your words also have to be correct. I use Grammarly whenever I can't find an editor. It's a little app online. I've mentioned this before. You can pop your copy into that and it goes through and it points out the misspelled words. That's my big downfall. So do that and have some products that are not horribly expensive. Sure, you could build something that's $3,000. And that may not start selling like hotcakes tomorrow. If you can make something that costs $30, that can get the ball rolling. And the way the Etsy algorithm works is the more sales you have and the more fulfillment you have, the higher the algorithm is going to bring you up to the top in search engine. So if you have really expensive things, people may not never see that. If you have a few, and not like all your stuff has to be inexpensive, but if you have a few inexpensive things that lead to a high turnover, a high sales rate, that's going to be best for the Etsy algorithm. And that's going to keep you busy and hopefully keep you motivated. Now, before I talk to Bob on the phone, I did some research. I looked at Bob's Facebook page that he mentioned. I looked for other web presence. I did a name search. I searched an address. I did a Google business listing search. I looked at his email. And oh boy, did I find a major issue. I don't think you could find Bob if I used his real name and gave you the state that he's located in. He is like almost invisible. He has a Facebook page. That's great. Do you know what the search engine optimization for a Facebook page is? Yeah, like near zero. It is better now than it used to be 10 years ago or 20 years ago, but it's still not great. And you've heard me before drone on and on about this. You need a website. Now, on his Facebook page, he has some gorgeous photos. Absolutely incredible. He's got that nailed. And the work that he's doing, his cabinet work, oh yeah, we're talking top notch here. Really, really good stuff. But you can't find him. There is no web presence. And I did track down his physical address, and yeah, yeah, you're not going to find him. So, Bob, if you're going to stay in this woodworking business professionally, we need to do some work there, buddy. Oh, crap. Look at the time. Okay. I'm going to run out of time doing that in this episode, so I think we're going to break this into two, and in the next episode, we'll jump into the weeds as far as your web presence. But first, before we end this episode, there's a couple things that I want to share. Number one, thanks to Dan, Nate, and Michael. I really appreciate the support you've thrown my way. Number two, SawStop. Oh, the hits keep on coming. I've mentioned this before, where the Consumer Product Safety Commission, the CPSC, they came out with this grand idea that everybody should be using table saws that have flesh sensing technology so that you don't lose a meat part to your table saw. And SawStop, which kind of invented this entire category of flesh sensing technology, held all the patents for this, and they aggressively would not allow anyone to enter the market. Well, then, I don't know, they were visited by Christmas past and decided to share the technology on the day that another competitor would come into the market. And everybody shouted for joy. We're going to get flesh sensing technology for free because Festool is going to give that to the public domain. Sure, table saws are going to get a lot more expensive overnight, but hey, there's still a lot of table saws on the used market that you can take advantage. Except if a lawyer gets a hold of this, and if I buy like a unisaw from some old timer and then cut my hand off on that, could I sue the old-timer for selling a defective product? Because that's, in essence, what this is going to turn all used table saws into, you know, defective product. Oh, my gosh. I mean, where does that end? Well, hold on to your saw blades. According to Woodworking Network, link in the show notes, a bill has been introduced in Congress that would prevent a proposed Consumer Product Safety Commission rule on table saw safety, claiming the rule would lead to a monopoly on table saws with finger detection technology. The proposed rule has drawn criticism from groups such as the National Association of Manufacturers that said it would double the cost of table saws and harm manufacturing in the U.S. I just pulled a couple paragraphs out of a pretty long article at woodworkingnetwork.com. Check that out. This is just crazy. You know, things back and forth. We have no idea where that's going to go. But stay tuned. I'm sure it's going to get even more crazy. Missed jobs this week. Does anybody out there want to make gaming tables? There is a huge demand, I think, for gaming tables. There used to be a company out in Seattle, Washington that just did some absolutely marvelous work. They were being shipped. Actually, they delivered these things personally all over the country. I can't even imagine doing the accounting for that type of home delivery. But they got into some family situations. Things change. And they ended up shutting down that business, and I haven't seen a real dominant player come into that since then. Not that I'm an expert in the gaming table market, but I would imagine that could be a wonderful regional market, something that, you know, if you could travel 2 hours, maybe 3 hours for doing deliveries and setup, or build something that you could load into a, you know, onto a pallet. That could be a very viable opportunity for someone out there. So recommendations for this week, the link to the woodworkingnetwork.com. Read about SawStop for yourself. Oh my gosh. Special thanks to listeners in Mills River, North Carolina, and Melbourne, Australia, and one listener from Rwanda. Really appreciate that. If you'd like to support the show, you can buy me a cup of coffee or make a donation directly. Links in the show notes. I am available for coaching if you have a particular hard spot in your business that you can't get over, or you just need a little, push in starting a business. I'd be more than happy to help. Check out the YouTube channel for Working at Woodworking. And until next week, happy woodworking.